Okay, good Erev Shabbos, everybody. I hope that we're going to survive out here without getting rained on, but at the moment it's nice. So we'll keep that thought in mind. People are still making their way down. I just have to preface what I'm talking about today with one or two comments. I'm just wondering, I saw... I've forgotten your name. The gentleman. Mr. Kaminsky, reading the Daily Post, the New York Post, and, you know, once upon a time, picking up a newspaper, many of us would have been tempted to read something called the horoscope. I'm sure they still have it in the paper, right? And what we're going to do today is just ask ourselves the question, is it allowed, is it acceptable for somebody of the Jewish persuasion, somebody who's Jewish, who believes in God, believes in divine providence, all the things that, you know, we'll talk a bit about that next week. Are you allowed to read a horoscope? It's a kind of simple question, but it becomes a very complicated question. And the reason why it's complicated is because there is a, for want of a better word, a gray area in Jewish life. The gray area in Jewish life is this, this kind of tension that we have, living on the one hand, with the concept that, you know, everything is Yad Hashem, we're under the control of God. And on the other hand, we all use the expression, and forgive me if you don't, but I would hazard to guess that 100% of you use the expression when you hear of a simcha, your reaction is the famous words, Mazel Tov. Now, does anyone know what Mazel Tov means? What is mazal? Good luck. But what are mazalot? If you open up a dictionary, what is a mazal? Yeah. There you go. Mazalot are the constellations of the universe. Okay, and of course that now maybe doesn't sound so doesn't sound so correct, because what you're saying, mazal tov, is really you're saying to chatan, kala, you know, whoever it is, the mechutonim, you're saying may the constellations be good. All right, now what? You know, with all due respect, what does that mean? What do you mean, the constellations? I mean, there's a wonderful place called the Planetarium. If you go to the Planetarium, there's one in New York, I went to the one in London, you see the constellations, but I don't think about that place every day. And when I hear of a simcha, the last thing I'm going to think about is a planetarium. And yet, this seems to be what we're talking about, mazal tov. And it's so, it's so universal in Jewish life, you know, everybody says it. But what I'm going to get you to do is maybe just to take one step back and to ask the obvious question, why? Why do we talk about the constellations? Why? Because that's what mazal means. Take a dictionary, you'll find mazalot are the constellations, the sun, the moon, the planets, etc. What's going on here? And I tell you why it becomes more interesting historically. Because really what we're talking about essentially are two different topics. We're talking about the concept of what is known, some people call it a science of astrology, looking at the stars and trying to predict on the basis of the stars, horoscopes, right? And there are the other issue which I want to talk about, which is connected really quite closely to this, is the issue of superstition. Now, you know, as Jews, we're not supposed to be superstitious, and the reality is, you know, that we all seem to be superstitious. Yeah, my grandson walked in this afternoon. So he's been trained that if any of you go up to him and say, you're cute, he is now going to respond to you, maybe, if he plays the game, Kanei Nahara, he's going to say. He's been trained to say Kanei Nahara. It's like training, you know, training a dog in the circus. But, you know, I have to, but it's just funny. And, of course, the question then is, what is this Kanei Nahara all about? Kein Ayin Hara, that's the German. Beli Ayin Hara in Hebrew, there should be no evil eye. Where does that come from? What's an evil eye? So here I've got two problems. I've got the problem of the constellations, mazal, and I've got the problem of ayin hara. So all of this is very odd. And to be perfectly honest, I'm going to argue that in fact this is a very grey area in Jewish life. The reality is that many people are, aware of this idea, but we live with it with a certain amount of reservation. And I'll begin this discussion with a historical episode. The historical episode goes like this. In the year 1194,
what is that, about 800 and something years ago, there was a community in France in the place called Marseille. Marseille is a beautiful place. I seem to remember maybe visiting it as a child, you know, going abroad. And Marseille was always a very established Jewish community. I think there's a community there today. And in 1194, they were having terrible, terrible sorrows because of the Crusades. The Crusades started in 1096, and they went right through Europe, and every time they came to a Jewish community, there was Gehak de Tzoros. Literally, you read about it, you can read about it in the history books. And in 1194, this community of Marseille, they wrote a letter to Rambam, to Maimonides. The Rambam, the famous rabbi who lived at that time in Egypt, and the famous doctor to the caliph of Egypt, and they wrote to him, Kavod Rav Rabbeisha. They wanted to know the following. They said to him that according to the stars that we have looked at, the astrology that we have studied, we are predicting that Mashiach will come at a certain time. Can you justify this? What do you think about it? Should we follow this particular prediction or not? And it's fascinating. I mean, you can understand their desperation. You know, there's this, the communities were looking for an answer for Yeshua for this terrible oppression that was going on. So they wrote to him, and they wrote this letter, which you can read. There is a book of letters of the Rambam in English, translated by somebody called, I think his name is Isidore Twersky, if I'm not mistaken, one of the Twersky family. And it's amazing what Rambam writes. He writes back to them and he says, you should know that what you are indulging in is not a science. He says, for want of a better word, it's a shtus. Shtus meaning it's an absolute waste of time. And Rambam was not in any way, conciliatory when it came to the concept of astrology. As far as he's concerned, it is an absolute waste of time. I'll just read to you what he says, because he spells it out. He says, Da Rabos, I do Rabos. He says, you should know, sirs, Shekol Otana Dvarim, Kulam Shel Gzeirata Kochavim. Everything you spoke about, which is to do with the stars, Shehem Omrim, Ye'orekach, Lo Ye'orekach, that people predict, and they say, this is going to happen, and this won't happen. Back to the horoscope again. Umolado Shel Zeh, Yimshoch Lo, Sheyeh Lo Kach, Lo Ye'orekach. And somebody's birth will make sure that this happens and this doesn't happen. As predicted, when you look at the horoscope, what's your birthday and what's your star sign? He says, Kol Otana Devarim, this is Rambam. He says, well, all of those things, Einan Divrei Chachma Klal, this is not wisdom, he says. But Tipshutim, Tipshus, Tipish means they are completely and utterly ridiculous. This is, one of a better word, the strongest word you can use is stupidity. He says those people who believe in such things are really fooling themselves. Rayot Barot Shem Behem Dovi. And there's obviously, he says that there's no question in his mind. Yesh li levatel kol ikrei Torah Devarim. Whatever you've said about astrology, he wants to cancel out straight away. As far as the Rambam is concerned, looking at the astrological predictions is, for want of a better word, forbidden. So back to Mr. Kaminsky. You can certainly look at the sports page. That won't give you too much heartache. Look at the editorial. It depends. Krauthammer's quite good. I like his editorials. But when you look at the horoscope, according to Rambam, dangerous. Don't do it. I don't know whether you do, but maybe a lot of people don't admit to it. But it's one of those things, you know, it's a bit of fun. We'll find out in a minute whether it really is a bit of fun, but I don't want to spoil it for you too much. All right, that's the Rambam's comment on astrology. But what do we do with the following? Let me read this to you. This is Talmud. It's taken from Talmud Shabbat, page 156, and it says the following. Let's see if I can read this. I have to take off my glasses. It says it was recorded in Rabbi Joshua ben Levi's notebook. So every good rabbi has a little notebook over here. My Rosh Yeshiva had a notebook with phone numbers. So I said to him once, his name was Ramosha Schwab, brother of the Rabbi Schwab from Washington Heights. I said, Ramosha, what's in your phone book? So he says, please go when you leave the yeshiva. I've got some shidduchim here and I want to set you up. So he had phone numbers of the girls that he taught and the boys, and that was his notebook. So every good rabbi wears a vest, and in the vest he's got a little notebook, and this was my Rosh Yeshiva. I never forget, he was an unbelievable man. He had other things in the notebook, but that was different. But this was something unique. And he made many shidduchim, I have to say, to his credit. Nebuchadnezzar died such a young man. It was unbelievable. Back to Rabbi Yehoshua. This is going back about 2,000 years. Listen to this. This is Talmud. I'm not making this up. He says, the Gemara says, he who is born on the first day of the week. Now you're going to ask yourselves, what day of the week was I born on? If you're born on a Sunday, Sunday's child, all right? What does the Gemara say? He says, shall be a man without one thing. You'll be missing something. So the Gemara says, what does that mean? What are you missing? So the Gemara says, does it mean that you're missing a virtue? In other words, maybe you won't be honest, or maybe you won't be brave. What does it mean? He says that Rav Ashi said, I was born on a Sunday. And to tell you the truth, I haven't been affected by this. So what it means, it says the Gemara, that in fact it means that either you'll be completely virtuous, a real tzaddik, or completely wicked, a real rasha. You're born on a Sunday, it's either or. Now this is Talmud, this is Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. I'm not making it, you can read this for yourselves. Now, why do we say Sunday is either or? Is as they say, obagor, begonish. The answer is because light and darkness were created on the same day. So you're either going to be very light, very holy, or very dark, very sinister. One or the other. And the Gemara says there was Rav Ashi on one side who was obviously very holy, one of the great rabbis. And the Gemara quotes a gentleman called Dama ben Kakusta, who was unfortunately a bit of a villain. And he was somebody who was born on a Sunday. Oh, he came down on the other side. Okay, it goes on. And it says, what about when you're born on a Monday? Born on a Monday, Monday's child, right? Many of you will probably know what I'm referring to. It says you're going to be bad-tempered. Monday's child, not the person to have an argument with. A grumpy sort of person. Why? Because the waters were divided on a Monday. If you go back to the creation story, we know the other waters of heaven, the waters on earth. So division. Division always means argument. So the person born on a Monday, the person you leave alone, you don't have an argument with him, because he's gonna be grumpy. It goes on. What happens if you're born on a Tuesday? You're born on a Tuesday, this is not good. It's either you're going to be wealthy, but at the same time, you're also going to be a bit of a rogue. All right? So let's put it together. And I fear, without mentioning names, if we check out who's sitting in jail at the moment, you might find they were born on Tuesday. I really don't know. I'm not going to go there, because it's a painful subject. What about if you're born on Wednesday? The Gemara gives all the reasons to do with creation. You're born on a Wednesday. This is good. It says you'll be smart and you'll have a good memory. Okay? Again, I'm reading Talmud here. Born on a Thursday. What happens then? You'll practice benevolence. You'll be a philanthropist. That's great, because that you need money for that. What? And again, the Gemara brings a whole bunch of reasons. Born on Erev Shabbos, it says you will be a seeker. So what does a seeker mean? To look for something. So Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak said, you'll be looking to do mitzvahs, looking to do good deeds. So being born on a Friday, excellent. What happens if you're born on a Shabbos? Not such a great piece of news. It says that you're born on a Shabbos, then you will die on Shabbos. Thank you very much. That's a nice piece of news. It's unbelievable, this. And the Gemara says, if that really happens to you, David HaMelech, this is the tradition about David, and obviously Moshe Rabbeinu born and died on the same day. I don't know whether it was a Shabbos, I'm not sure. But whatever, then it says that that's only with tzaddikim. And I know there are cases of tzaddikim, you may know of cases, somebody told me recently, I can't remember which Rebbe it was, who born and died on the same birthday. I don't think that was true of Lubavitcher Rebbe, I don't think so, but there are other tzaddikim like that. All right. That's Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, one of the great rabbis of the Talmud, and for want of a better word, he's reading me my horoscope. He's telling me, just check out what day of the week you were born. Now here comes part two of the Gemara, and I'm reading this to you because it's unbelievable. The Gemara goes on and says, Rabbi Chanina said, go and tell Rabbi Yehoshua he's barking up the wrong tree. I'm paraphrasing. It says it's nothing to do with the constellation that you were born under, it's to do with the constellation and the time of the day when you were born. So now you've got to go back and find out not only what day you were born, but you have to find out what time of the day you were born. Listen to this. It says, if you're born under the constellation of the sun, I'm assuming that means when the sun rises, right? Early in the morning. It says you'll be a distinguished person. Wow, that's nice. Okay? You will eat and drink of his own. In other words, you never have to come onto other people for food and for anything. Your secrets will be uncovered. The people will want to read what you have to say. Amazing. And of course, the Gemara points out, if you're a thief, if you devote your life to being a gunner, you won't be a good gunner. They'll always catch you and you'll always go to jail. So if you're that way inclined, go on the straight and narrow. Don't follow Geneva. You're born under Venus. Again, part time of the day. Don't ask what time of the day this is. It doesn't say. But I've assumed people know. then it says the person will be immoral. Okay? Bit of bad luck on that one. And again, the reason there is given, without going into the reason, you're born under Mercury. What's going to happen is you'll be smart. You'll have a good memory. And again, they give reasons for this. And it goes on, and it goes on. Unbelievable, this. Here's the one that I like. What happens if you're born under the sign of Mars? What happens if you're born, under the influence of Mars? So there is famous. The Gemara says it's going to be one of two things. You're going to be involved with red stuff. What's red stuff? Blood. So the Gemara says you've got a choice. Either you can become a surgeon, not for everybody, but certainly not for the squeamish. You can become a thief. You may have to do some sort of bodily harm. That's one suggestion. Gemara's leaving this open to you. It says, but of course you may become a shoichet. Not so bad. And at the end of the list, of course it says you may become a moil. And I suspect that that was the bottom of the list. If you say the surgeon at the top and the moil at the bottom, that's kind of interesting. The Gemara says that Rabba says, I was born under the sign of Mars. You know, I'm a good guy, so it doesn't affect me. So his partner in learning, Abaye, says, you're going to inflict punishment. You know, at the end of the day, you're a rabbi, you're a dying. One day, you're going to have to decide between life and death. In which case, you know, you're born under that particular influence, this is going to affect you. It goes on, and the Talmud here just is beyond belief. And again, the question you have to ask, do we take this seriously? Is the Talmud really saying to us, even though these rabbis are very, very mainstream, Shur ben Levi, you know, is quoted in Halakha all the time, is the Gemara really saying to us that when it comes to our life and the future and everything else, that we should find out when we're born? We should find out not only the day, but we should find out the time? Is that really what it's about? And then we can map out our lives? It just doesn't sound Jewish. This doesn't sound right. I remember in London, this was about maybe 10 or 12 years ago, there was a call-in, you know, like a phone-in show on the radio. And what you did, it was really disturbing, because you would call in and you would give the person your date of birth and the time of day when you were born. And you heard a rustle of papers in the background. And then the person at the other end, who was apparently an expert on all this stuff of birth, times and dates and charts and all the rest of it, he used to come back and say, well, let me tell you a few things about your life. And he would start saying, at the age of 12 you did this, and the age of 22 you did that, and you got married, and the marriage was successful or it wasn't. You know, and people would generally agree with what the guy was saying. And it's the scariest thing I've ever heard in my life. Because he would then say, but now, you know, in the future, what's going to be? And it really was quite unbelievable. And the question is, do we as Jews really subscribe? Do we really believe in this particular concept? Are we, and as I said at the beginning, mazal tov, we talk about mazalot, we talk about constellations, we're saying, may the constellations be good. That's what mazal tov literally means. And in which case, are we really adopting this particular approach? Or are we, in fact, I would use the words giving into it, but we don't really hold of it. Let's put it that way. I'm going to suggest that we're kind of living in a grey area here, and I'll tell you why in a minute. There are other references to mazal. The Gemara puts it very bluntly. Omar Rava, it's Gemara in Moed Katan. The Gemara says like this, Chaye bonei mazone, right? Life, children, and sustenance, food. Lo bezechut talia milta, it doesn't depend on your merit. Ela b'mazla talia milta, it depends on your mazal. On the star, the sign of the zodiac that you were born under. I remember my shul in London, and some of your shuls may have this, they had a roof, on the roof of the shul, they had a design which was according to the signs of the zodiac. And it always amazed me that you had this in an Orthodox shul. I should have asked the rabbi at the time, I didn't. I know that if you open up your machzor, at the back of the machzor for both Pesach and Sukkot, there are tefillot, which we say, you know, on one we say tefillah Geshem in the winter, and we say tefillah Tal in the spring, before the spring begins at Pesach. And if you look at the back of your machzor, there are long, long tefillot, which nobody says. I don't even think the Yekka, I don't even think in Washington Heights they say it anymore, if they ever did. But it's there in the machzor, and there are tefillot with pictures of the signs of the zodiac. There's the Pisces, and there's the Taurus, and then you name it, all of the things that we recognize back to Mr. Kaminsky, who's having a little snooze, I want to wake him up, but it's good before Shabbos, have a little snooze, I'm sorry I woke you up. And it's in the horoscope, right? You've got all of that there, the same pictures. And again, we ask a question, what is that doing in a shul? What is it doing there? And again, there's references as a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. I don't want to go through his Gemaras, but the question is, what do we do with all of this? Do we honestly believe that this has an effect? Or do we believe that is in fact, as the Rambam says, tipshut, it's an absolute waste of space, it really should not be something that bothers you. What do we do? And I would argue, to a certain extent, we do take it into account, because we use the phrases, we say mazel tov. We use that expression very quickly. Yes, question.
The very same minute that this person was born, many other people were born.
Correct.
Not everybody has the same mazel.
Correct.
Mazel comes from Hashem.
Correct.
And to daven for our mazel, we should have
Shem. Perfect. And what you're leading me into is what the Gaonim say. The Gaonim lived about 1,000 years ago.
I'm sorry, I look up all the big, learned that people are so disappointing for me that they can't write this.
It's beyond belief, but it's in Talmud. It's part of Gemara. But let me tell you what the Gaon is. Listen to this. Clearly, what I'm going to suggest, and this is really the whole derech here, because I believe that's the same thing with superstition. What has happened to Jews in Galut, when we've gone into exile, is that very often the surroundings have affected us. I would argue this is true about the way we speak, the way we pronounce, or let's use the word, mispronounce Hebrew. Right, I now really find it very difficult to listen to the Jewish music on the radio, because 9 times out of 10, unless it's chazoners, they are mispronouncing the Hebrew language. And you know, vayomer yoy is, there's no extra yud there. Vayomer is the way I learned it, and all of a sudden it becomes yoy. And if you don't say the oy, then you're really in trouble, because you don't pronounce it the way you should, even though you're mispronouncing. It can mean something else. Who is he and he is she? You know, we have in the Hasidic world. I've always wondered how they fulfill the mitzvah of Kriya Satara, but that's something that's a separate problem. And the reality is that, you know, how should we put it here? There are a lot of things which we are affected by the surroundings. And my argument's going to be here that it could very well be all of this element of mazalot and everything that comes into the Jewish tradition here via the Talmud is a product of the surroundings in which the Jews lived. They lived in Babylon. They lived in a very superstitious world. They lived in a world which was full of iron horrors. All right, if you look in the Jewish encyclopedia, we've got it here in the shul, you'll see that this idea of the evil eye came from Persia. It came from that society, which really, what is the iron horror? What does it really boil down to? It boils down to the concept of jealousy. There should be no iron horror, no evil eye on this person, or on this young person, or on this event, this marriage, or whatever, because it's concept of jealousy, and that can bring something damaging. Where is all this coming from? And the answer has to be, it's coming from the world around them. I absolutely believe this. And I believe that our grandparents and our great-grandparents that came from Europe, and many of you that came from Europe as well, you maybe grew up in a world which was also incredibly superstitious, not necessarily built on sort of, Jewish origins, but it became part of Jewish life. And again, I think back to a friend of mine in London, who, when they made a bar mitzvah for their son, I walked into the house, and I'm not exaggerating, some of you will tell me you probably do this, is that they put garlic over the doors. Every door and window there was garlic. I said, I know that you cook with garlic, but this is kind of ridiculous. You know, you're putting garlic everywhere, the whole house smells of garlic. Now, you know, you could argue they come from Hungary, which is what they did. They actually came from Transylvania. That bothered me. Because, you know, Transylvania, garlic, there's a secular whole business with certain gentlemen who I shall remain nameless. I don't want to go there. But the reality is that they said to me that the mother of the bar mitzvah said that she had a tradition from her grandmother from where she came from Transylvania, from Romania, that at a simcha you put this up, it's against the iron horror. It's something to do with the... Again, maybe you've seen this. You know about this, right?
I had the experience. My grandson was born. There was a pitch in the van. And they brought back garlic. And I never saw...
They brought garlic?
Yeah.
Unbelievable. There's two people in the world.
I don't know. They put garlic and I never saw this.
I told you, I only saw it once. And now I've heard about it twice. That gives me the shivers, I have to say.
They give them small packages. Garlic, a piece of sugar...
And here we go. And again, where is all this coming from? Yeah, and you'll do it. And don't get me wrong. You know, if it's a valid family tradition, I'm not telling you to stop. But I'm asking myself, where does all this come from? Where is it? This is not Yiddish Adab. We don't believe this. It came from Poland, came from Hungary, it came from Romania, all the countries where people came from. This is where, I guess, the idea originated. And what I'm suggesting, I'll just, maybe you have just one comment.
You know, certain things which my mother taught me not to do.
Not to do, great.
Right, don't open an umbrella in the house.
Yeah, that's right, there's superstitions.
I was working with a Christian girl.
Just a second,
I was working with a Christian girl, and we were going to leave the building, and it was raining. I said, why don't you open your umbrella before you go? She said, no, you're not allowed.
In the house. That's so interesting. Oh my goodness. Right, so again, who came first? The chicken or the egg, you know?
The Jewish thing and the Gentiles did the same thing.
I had the same thing. And I'm gonna disappoint you because I really do believe that they came first on this stuff. I really do believe, you know, when we kiss the Rebbe's hand, just watch what they do with the Pope. And they kiss the Pope's ring. Just look at that and say to yourself, who came first, the Rebbe or the Pope? And I have to say, unfortunately, it's more likely that the Pope came before the Rebbe. So maybe there was a bright spark who saw the Goyim kissing the Pope's hand. So they said, that's a good idea, let me kiss the Rebbe's hand. And now they do that. The Rebbe, everybody kisses his hand. It could be, I don't know. And yeah, and
they got one better. That, yes.
You don't put a hat on in bed because that's a sort of sign of whatever. Oh, that you remind me of a young man I was in yeshiva with who, because he was so attached to his black hat, had to say hamapu before he goes to sleep. He had to put a hat on. I should have taught. If I'd known this, I could have cured him of that. Can you imagine with pajamas and a hat? It was very strange. Unbelievable. All right, but my wife is in the Chevra Kadisha. She tells me there's a lot of minhagim there, which she does when they do the Tara, which also is, you know, they put like sticks in the hand so that they'll be able to walk to Yerushalayim. All these sort of very strange, some of it obviously very Jewish, some of it I'm going to argue, and this is where we're coming from, it's been, as it were, incorporated from the society. Could be because of Ayin Horas, it could be because of somebody felt this was the right, you know, some rabbi sort of felt it was the right thing to do. And well, you're going to see this in a second.
I'm on Monday, so then my future husband called me up and said, we can't go Monday. My mother said, we got to go Tuesday.
Yeah, yeah. Then my favorite story, I have to tell you this story because it's really one of my favorites, is the shul which they do the circuits on Sukkot with the Lulav and Esrog, right? And they're walking around, and at a certain point, everybody bows. And there's no reason for them to bow. And in fact, they bow with bended knee. They go like this, and then they bow. You know, what's going on? And every year they did this. Every year. So somebody there, a younger man, said, I've got to find out why they do this. So he tried to find the oldest member of the shul. And he found the man, 98 years old. So he said, Rabbi, I've got a question for you. Why does this Kehillah, the only place in the world, I've seen them bow during the middle of the Hakafas when they go around. He says, younger man, he says, I'll tell you why. He says, you know, that we moved shuls about 50 years ago. And the old shul, there was a beam which came down so low that if you didn't bow, you hit your head against the beam. It's true. And that's why we bow. Now, I'm laughing because my shul has just opened a new shul. They're davening in a basement. And they've now moved into a new shul. Now, when they used to do Hagba, they raised the Torah in the basement. You couldn't raise it because the ceiling was low. So they used to do what I call half Hagba, which means they raised it, but you had to bend your knees. I said, this is going to become a minhag in the shul, in the new shul, because you did it now for a couple of years like that. It's going to become the new custom to how to pick up the Torah. Everyone's going to go crazy. But, you know, we're strange like that. We adopt these things, even though they don't make sense. Nothing counts.
Not one, not two, not three.
Yeah, the center. You know, we use this expression for the minyan. The oilam. Why is he called the oilam? Because you count the minyan, Oshiat Amecha, use a pasuk, and the pasuk ends with the word olam. So the Yiddish always said that the oilam is here. The oilam meaning the tenth person, because that's the tenth word of the verse. That's the oilam. That's debatable. That's a whole discussion about that. And there's a lot of... not everybody agrees on that point. All right, so that's for another time. And it becomes halacha, but it also becomes like Yiddish folklore as well. This expression in Yiddish, the oilo. All right, if you'll be here for the Yiddish guy who's speaking here in a few weeks' time, he'll tell you the whole history of that word. Okay, from a philological point of view as well as a halachic point of view. You're right, but it's developed into a concept. All right, to be the oilon, to be the center, that's really something very special. It's become a whole thing, but you're absolutely right to a certain extent. But I will say to you, there are different opinions. I have to talk to you about that at the end. Just to find another question, because I want to get to the point here.
Yeah. That the knock on wood is really coming from the goyim.
Yeah.
Knock on the cross.
That's the
so
knock on
it.
Oh, thank you.
If I see a Jew knocking, I said, please don't.
Thank you.
Because it comes from
my mother, Zichron Lebracha, used to do that. And I asked her once, Mom, where did you get this from? Oh, Bobby used to do it. So I said, where did Bobby get it from? She came from Russia, Kiev. I never asked my Bobby. I wasn't able to ask her. And who knows? And all of this, again, it becomes folklore. It becomes part of our behavior. But is it coming from a Jewish source? My argument is very often, not always, but very often we've just incorporated it like we incorporate the tombs.
But we think if they did it, what could it hurt?
So we did it. It's as Feldnish, as Artnish, as they say. But it's so interesting. And again, I'm working at the moment next to a secretary who originates from Yugoslavia. She comes from Belgrade. So one day, on AOL, you can play klezmer. They have AOL radio. So I'm playing this klezmer music. So she says to me, Rabbi, why are you playing Yugoslavian music? So I said, what do you mean Yugoslavian music? It's Jewish music, klezmer. She says, no, this is the music I grew up with. So of course, the penny dropped, and I realized that we didn't invent klezmer. We chopped it from the society around us. They invented it. We just made it sound very Jewish, and then we took it on, and it became Jewish music. So there's no originality there. The originality maybe is maybe in some other tunes, more in the Sephardi tunes than the Ashkenazi. It's a whole debate by itself, but it's all boiling down to the same thing. Let me just say I'll take one or two comments, and then I'll just want to finish this point. Yes. Mrs. Simon.
You are saying on Tuesday you go to the dentist and to the doctor.
Yes.
Because Tuesday is keto.
Keto, yes.
That should be good.
Yeah, I would argue you don't go to the dentist because it's better than sometimes. I prefer not to go to the dentist. I'd rather go, but on the other hand, I understand what you're saying. Hopefully it'll come out and won't find too many fillings. Right. That's a good suggestion, yes.
Yeah, I feel that all these superstitions that we incorporated in our daily lives, it was because we lived in a surrounding of security and fear.
Yeah.
And if there was anything that suggested that we can protect ourselves,
we went to do it. Correct, and I agree with you. It's so much bound in the lives that we led. And we've brought all of this now to America, we brought it to Israel. Bunkers, right? Let me just mention bunkers, because that's an unbelievable thing. You read about this, there's expression, it's take the bunkers, right? It's like a waste of time. Bunkers are these hot, what are they? They're like cups. And they drain the infection out of the body. Now, you read about this if you read Shalom Aleichem and you read the stories from Europe, from Russia, bunkers. So what happened to me, again, about 20 years ago, I'm living in Israel, in Yerushalayim, and my neighbor, a very fine individual, his wife, I don't know, must have been early 20s, she told me one day that she's going to visit the woman in Machne Yehuda. I said, who's the woman in Machne Yehuda? We're having this discussion, so she says she's the woman who does refuot. Refuot are healing. All right, what does she do? She explains to me, she takes these hot cups and she puts it on you and she leaves it there and you come back and it looks like splodged. Bunkers, that's what she's doing. And I explain, and you know about bunkers and everybody knows. And in Yiddish I think they made fun of it, but it's part of, again, the, let's call it the social, whatever you want to call it, the scene in which we live, and we adopted it, and it became part of the Yiddish language. It became part of our language that we say when something is useless, we use the word bunkers. All right? And it's just one of those strange, wondrous things that we as Jews are able to incorporate all of these things into our tradition. But what I want to suggest to you is the following, because it's a bit disturbing. It's disturbing in the sense that sometimes it's coming, like you said, from the cross. It's coming from such a, let's put it this way, let's use the word, I don't like the word, but let's use the word, goyish origin, that you say to it, what are we doing? What are we doing? And I'm just going to tell you a story. Story again from the Gemara, because I believe this is the way to go. The story goes like this. Famous story, Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was walking the road one day. So what happened was that Rabbi Akiva
he's accosted, I think it's the expression that you would use, by a fortune teller. And the fortune teller says to him, Rabbi, or he doesn't even call him Rabbi, he says, you should know that on the day your daughter gets married, she's going to die. Thank you very much. You know, how much do you want for that prediction? You know, you kick the guy out. Now, you'd say to me, if you had such a person accosting you in Central Park, you know, not when you call the police, but more to the point, you would ignore it. You know, the guy's obviously on whatever substance he's on, and leave him alone. Rabbi Akiva, the Gemara says, he was worried about this for 20 years. He worried, he probably had sleepless nights. His daughter, he was told, was going to die on her wedding day. And of course, the day comes and they make the shidduch and she's going to get married and everyone is excited. Rabbi Akiva is not so excited. You know, you can see there's a certain worry on his face. And as he comes nearer and nearer to the wedding day, and the Gemara gives this whole story. It says that Rabbi Akiva got more worried and he comes to the day of the wedding. And it says something very strange. This woman, what happened was, in those days, they didn't have like little drawers and things that we keep our jewelry in or whatever. These days, they used to make like holes in the wall. So they used to keep the brooches and whatever in that particular space. And this woman, this young lady who was getting married, Bakiva's daughter, she needed a pin for her veil. She needed some sort of a long pin that they would pin the veil or whatever they used to wear in those days on the head. So she sees the pin sticking out from this part of the wall. So what she does, she tries to get it out, so she pushes it and then she pulls. And on the end of the pin, there is a poisonous snake, dead. And she goes and tells her father, and her father almost faints. When he's revived, she says to him, Abba, why are you, you know, I mean, I understand this was a nace, but what do you, and then he explains to her the whole thing. And he says to her, he says, what did you do today? What's the chut? Because he was convinced that this was going to be a terrible day and that his daughter was going to die. And of course she didn't. The wedding went off and it was beautiful. And she said, well, listen, this morning when everybody was in shul or whatever, there was a knock on the door. And Nebuchadnezzar, there's a poor man that came to the door. And I gave him some breakfast and I gave him some cornflakes and whatever. And he went away and he was happy and that's it. And Rabbi Akiva said, that's it. He says, that has to be. The Pasuk said, staka tatzil mimavet. That if you do charity, you do an act of staka, it can save you from death. What is so incredible is that Rabbi Akiva took the whole thing seriously. You and me, I would say to this person, get out of it. You know, what do you want from my life? What do you say? And Rabbi Akiva took it seriously. And I think this is the clue. The clue is this, and I think this is where why superstition has become very much part of the Jewish experience, even though it really shouldn't be. Because really, what we're saying in the Gemara, and I think the Gemara is putting it very bluntly, that if you involve yourself with it, then it affects you. If you don't involve yourself with it, it won't affect you. Rabbi Akiva, had he not been accosted by this person, he would never have known this, this would not have been an issue, and nothing would have been said. The fact that he came across it, and he indulged, or he listened to the prediction, not that he really wanted to, but that's what happened, it affected him. And this is what I believe has happened in the Jewish experience. I really believe the Gemara says that we are not dependent on Mazal. As far as we're concerned, a Mazal Yisrael, the planets and the constellations and everything doesn't affect us. Because we're above it. We are directly affected by the hand of God. Period. Yad Hashem, and that's it. But the trouble is that if we indulge, or if we are connected, if we have anything to do with it, and in the societies we live, even today, as I said, just looking at a horoscope, it may seem innocent, but it means that we're indulging in something like that, then maybe, just maybe, it can affect us. And that's why I think we play safe. B'li Ayin Hara, and it's really, what's Ayin Hara's got to do with us? It's God's hand, and that's it. But again, I think that we kind of, it's like an insurance policy. In case the Ayin Hara has an effect, then we say B'li Ayin Hara, Kanein Hara. In case the mazal is going to affect the whole shidduch or the whole wedding or everything, whatever simcha it is. So we say mazal tov, that the effect should be good. Should we really be saying this? Should we really be worried about it? My answer is absolutely not. And the Gemara says it, a mazal Yisrael. But we, because of the society around us, because of our life experience, because of our traditions and everything that's gone on, it's now become so much part of our lives, it affects us immensely. And some people really do get affected by this, and I would say to you, you know, it's one of those things that we live with, don't get overly excited about it,
But on the other hand, if you're used to sort of, you know, the Kanei Haaretz, then just continue doing it. It's, as they say, it's a good insurance. Yeah. But is it more than that? I hope not. Yes. It doesn't hurt. It's like a bracha from the Rebbe. You know, it doesn't hurt. Is it going to work? You know, it's up to you. You believe in what he does. But again, it's all part of a mindset. It's an attitude.
If you believe in it, it's worth every day of yours because you keep on worrying.
And then you start worrying and you can become obsessive about it. And people... Correct, and people do get affected by these things, and that's the downside of this. And I hear you, and it can be a problem. Yes.
About the palm reading, I had a gypsy maid, and she showed me the lifeline, and I'm just looking at. I don't believe in it.
Yeah.
Then one day at work, she says, "Take a look at mine," and I see it's broken, it's short.
Yeah.
And I said, "I don't want to say." She says, "You know, somebody told me I have a short life." So I said, well, it's not very long. It's broken.
Yeah.
So about, I don't know, 3 months or 6 months later, she comes to work and she dropped dead on the station.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So ever since then, I'm...
Oy vey. And I would say to you, like, I tell you a story. I was with my...
Look at that.
I understand. And I was with my granddaughter and we were in a fun fair in Florida. And there is a fortune teller there. Now, as far as I'm concerned, this is all a waste of time. My granddaughter said, why don't we go in? Why don't we see what she has to say? And I said, name's Shira. I said, Shira, no. And I explained to her, and I said, you know what? Sometimes it's not worth it. It's like trying to jump off the end of the, into the pool, and you're not sure whether you can swim. You know, better, you know what? Learn how to swim first, and then you can do your diving. I said, this is the equivalent, and she understood it. She was a bright girl, and we didn't go in. And there are people that, unfortunately, get sucked into this. Now, there are two types. There are charlatans out there who are just taking advantage of you. But I do believe there are some people who really do claim to know something. In which case, as far as I'm concerned, you stay with yours, I'll stay with mine. I rely on God. You know, and with a bit of emunah and bitachon, that's really the way to go. Once you have a story like this, and your story is scary, I would say to you, you're absolutely right, have nothing to do with it, because lo aleinu, it really is kind of... This is where Rabbi Akiva, that's why he worried. You know, my question on the Gemara, why was he so worried? Now, you know, you're a rabbi, you're a holy man, ignore it. The answer is, no, once it's come into his life, he had to take it seriously. And I'm saying to you, no, better not to bring this in. The horoscope, again, back to Mr. Kaminsky, you can read the sports page, read every page. The horoscope, you know, ignore the horoscope. Don't even go there. Not worth it, even if it's a bit of fun. Just not worth it, because once you bring it in, it's not good. It's one of those things you don't want to bring in. Just a couple of comments, Mrs. Bennett.
Very sorry to hear that. Here's somebody made palm reading and tell you how long you're going to live.
That's scary. They do that.
It is. I'm surprised that they do that.
Yeah, yeah. Correct. And from a Jewish perspective, it's unacceptable. Correct. Correct. And there are people on television, the guy who speaks to the people on the other side, and you know, all these sort of comments. All of this stuff.
Yeah.
They do it for money. And again, as I said, the charlatans are out there, but there's also people who maybe have a bit of knowledge in this or claim to have. And as far as I'm concerned, as a thinking, God-fearing Jew, I rely on God. That's the bottom line. Don't be a fool. But sometimes you can be a fool and it can really affect you. And Rabbi Akiva wasn't a fool, but he had the misfortune of hearing it and it really affected him. It's an unbelievable story. Final comment. Oh, the bendel. I got to tell you a great story about a bendel, because this is a true story. I might have told you this before. It's just unbelievable. I teach at Stern College, at the girls' section of yeshiva. And there were... I had students, till last year, they were quadruplets. Four. And they live in Columbus, Ohio. Three girls and a boy. And the boy was in the yeshiva, and the girls were in Stern College, in the girls' school. Four. And I one day we were schmoozing, and I said, you know, it's very unusual that your mother had four children, especially 20, whatever it was, 20 odd years ago. So one of the girls told me, and she was very, you know, she was very open about it. She said, well, I want to tell you, Rabbi, this story. So I said, tell me. So she said, look, her mother was trying to get pregnant for a long time, and eventually they did tipul, you know, a treatment. And at the same time, the mother went to Eretz Yisrael. They're from family, from Columbus. And she went to Kever Rochel, and there's a woman sitting there with the bendel. She gives you the red string. But for some reason, this is where it gets a bit spooky. For some reason, instead of giving her a string around her wrist, she tied it four times around her waist. Four times around her waist. She came back, and within a year, there they are. The quads are born. So what I'm going to say to you is, yeah, Bli Ayin Hara, and everything else that I'm going to say, you know, when you get the red string, just, you know, if it's given to you, so you wear it, you know, it won't, as Mrs. Bennett said, it doesn't hurt, you know, it's not one of those things that you just discard it, okay? On the other hand, should we go out of our way looking for that? I'm sure this woman didn't look for the woman with the string, but it just happened like that, all right? And there are stories like this, which, and again, I'm sitting in front of these girls, three of them, and I'm shaking. I said, this is an unbelievable story. And they said, I know, you know, every time they tell anybody, everybody gets a bit freaked out. But on the other hand, there they are. So is it because of the four strings? I don't know, but there's something there. All right? So that's it. As I said, that's a good story. It really is. And I'm not making that one up. It really is for real. It's an unbelievable story. Any other comments? Because I don't want to leave everybody too freaked out before Shabbos. Just to say to you that Bli Ayin Hara, you know, sort of everything should be, as we say, a gitta shor, everything should be really at a good time. This should be a really wonderful Shabbat. Weather should be good. Add all the phrases that you want to add, you know, everything that we say in Yiddish. And as I said, you know, it's one of those things that we live with. Don't ever stop saying Mazel Tov, more Mazel Tovs the better. That's always going to be the case. But now, maybe when you say it, it's one of those expressions that maybe you'll have a bit more awareness of what you're actually saying. I wish everybody good Shabbos. Thank you.